Good morning again. I'm very happy to be here this morning, and Valerie, that was really excellent and interesting. I enjoyed your presentation. It's wonderful to see Dazan again, and thank you, Valerie, for putting this together. I normally don't like to go to conferences. There are lots and lots of reasons, but in this particular case, I'm here because it's an issue I feel very strongly about, and also it's in New Orleans. I can't deny that. So, can I tell you? My talk today is really about knowledge production in a sort of a larger way in looking at science and the use of black women's bodies in the creation of science. So some of it is not going to be easy in the beginning, but I expect you can handle it. This painting here that you see, that is interesting painting, is called Gynecologic Surgeon by Robert Tom. I put Betsy in the painting. It really should be called Betsy. And that's at the center of this picture is a serene presentation of these women as though they are willing participants. At the center is Betsy, who is about to undergo Dr. Sims' experimentation of fistulas without any anesthetics. He would slice parts of her vagina and then attempt to sew the areas where there were ruptures. This while she screamed in pain, Dr. Sims experimented on five women that we know of. We know three names, Lucy, Betsy, and Anarka. Now, one of the interesting things about knowledge and what I call consciousness, that if you did not know anything about the background of this painting, you'd think, it's what a lovely painting, isn't that nice? But the awareness of what's going on, I think, is very important. Marion Sims, in his biography, said that Lucy's agony was extreme. She was prostrated, and I thought she was going to die. That was before the days of anesthetics. That is not true. That's what he says in his biography, but that is not true. And the poor girl, on her knees, bore the operation with great heroism and bravery. I'm trying to want you to sort of separate who is heroic and who is not. The most heroic of Dr. Sims' victims was Anarka. He had conducted these operations for 5 years, and after using silver as a treatment, he published a paper on vesicovaginal repair in JAMA in 1852. And Anarka basically, that we know of, he did 30 operations on her alone. These enslaved women from the South were important in the development of cesarean sections, removal of the ovaries and bladder stones, among others. So this is what happened to Dr. Marion Sims. He has a statue in Central Park in commemoration, and he is the father of gynecology. And there's been a lot of protests raised about this statue over the years. And so it's now entered in the Central Park information. So when you read about the statue, there's some discussion about the controversy. And now I'm coming to an important, significant black woman who is foundational to modern science. The book, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, has made the name and the story of Henrietta Lacks known globally. Mrs. Lacks' cells were taken from her cervix without her permission when she was a patient at Johns Hopkins. The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks is the story behind the HeLa cell line. Of course, HeLa means Henrietta Lane, Helen Lane, not Henrietta, which was a name they gave publicly rather than her real name. An immortal line of cells that are responsible for some of the most important innovations in modern science, from the vaccine for polio to discoveries in cancer and AIDS. And there are a litany, development of virology, cloning, I mean, you name whatever modern scientific discoveries we've made, it really based on this woman's cells. The HeLa cells were taken from a poor African woman. This is a little quote from the there's something called Timmerline that traces her contributions. I have it in my references. Traces the contributions of the cells from 1950 to current time. So the biography should have that. And she died from a cancer that was very aggressive. Now, these cells have generated billions of dollars, and her children were even followed for their genome without their permission, and that genome was made public without their permission. Her children did not know about her cells until 25 years later. In August 2013, the NIH agreed that the lax genome data will be accessible only to those who apply for and are granted permission. And two representatives of the lax family will serve on the NIH group responsible for reviewing biomedical researchers' applications of controlled access to HeLa cells. Additionally, any researcher who uses the data will be asked to include an acknowledgement to the lax family in their publications. Now, the new understanding between the NIH and the lax family does not include any financial compensation for the family. The lax family hasn't and won't see a dime of the profits that came from the findings generated by the HeLa cells, but this is a moral and ethical victory. Now, black people and people of color always have moral and ethical victories. I don't like that. So I'm from the Caribbean, so if I go into my little dialect, you have to understand. It's okay. So that really got on my nerves when I saw moral and ethical victory. We always getting the moral, we are morally superior, we are just wonderful all the time. But this is a moral and ethical victory for a family long excluded from any acknowledgement and involvement in genetic research in their and their matriarch made possible. So this is something that we ourselves buy into. We buy into the fact that yes, we are good people and we are morally better and we're doing the right thing and so forth and so forth. So I have some problems with that. So the remarkable discoveries in medicines and technologies in the United States would not have been possible without the experimentation and exploitation of black women's bodies. This is significant because black women are the worst off in almost all measurements of health. And Tamara spoke about some of that. I'm not going to give you a litany, and Valerie spoke about that as well, in environment. A quick look at the current statistics will show higher death rates in breast cancer, higher infection rates of HIV, higher rates of obesity, cardiovascular deaths, lung cancer, strokes, and a whole slew of other things. So you are public health people, and hopefully you know that stuff. I say this to emphasize the irony that the contributions of these southern black women to medical cures have affected their progeny minimally. Indeed, many of the cures that came as a result of HeLa cells are not available to her own people who are still mired in poverty and minimal social capital. Now, this concept of social capital is something I want to sort of pay some attention to. The contributions of black and enslaved women have been clearly documented. There's no question that Henrietta Lacks was violated and her children were violated by science and medicine. The Lacks family, in their agreement with the NIH, said that they were not asking for money. They have been told repeatedly that this is not possible, that too much time has passed, that the people who did this are dead, that the courts would support the researchers, that there's no way to calculate a payment, there's no precedent, that Johns Hopkins did not make any money off her cells because they were given away by George Guy, who was the scientist who was involved at the time, and so on and so on. Well, I reject all of this. I believe that Lacks family in these public encounters say they want no money as a reflection of their own, what I call, limited social and intellectual capital. They're ethically and morally superior. But if you look at the Lacks family website, there's an area for donations of the Lacks family. Why is this? If you look at the side there, you'll see After their article was published, many people asked how they could make donations. And if you want to give money to Henrietta's family, you can click here. At the bottom it says there's no tax deduction and so forth and so forth. So, you know, it's on the website. It's still up on Google and so forth and so forth. You can find it. So there's one public image and there's another image, which clearly I think they understand that it is not possible for them. So now I'm going to go on to the issue area of compensation. In 2013, North Carolina agreed to pay $3 million to victims of eugenics, which happened from 1907 to 1914. In 1997, President Clinton apologized to 5 of the 8 survivors of the Tuskegee experiment. A compensation settlement of $10 million for all of the victims was reached. I believe that the Lacks case requires a new way of thinking about compensation. I think it's possible, but we have to have more creative and innovative ways of thinking about this. In an essay written by Larry Palmer called Paying for Suffering, The Problem of Human Experimentation, he argues the following, that although the Tuskegee legal team led by Fred Gray was successful, it did not consider an institutional analysis that would have allowed him to consider science and medicine as powerful institutional forces. Indeed, the growth of medicine and science might require the development of new legal concepts. I think this is critical. I'm not a lawyer, but I see myself as an advocate we're all involved in social justice in some ways. And I particularly am concerned because compensation seemed to vary a lot on more male suffering. Mm-hmm. Gender suffering internationally, historically, globally is not even seen. So if you indulge me a little bit on my little militancy or anger, whatever, please bear with me. I want to quote directly from Palmer's analysis. Finally, he says, the Tuskegee experiment sends a clear message to lawyers they must become reflective practitioners, active legal minds that continually question the institutional frameworks that are brought to problems. Lawyers who are crafting settlements and drafting legislation in the aftermath of the public outrage over the Tuskegee study might have operated without a conception of the relationship of law to the institutions of modern science and medicine. Because modern science and medicine seem like nefarious big blobs out there that are just working without any intentionality. So, you know, you can't sort of hone them down. Such an institutional conception is all the more necessary today when modern medical research, particularly in its quest for genetic understanding of health and disease, has heightened the ability of professionals to play the God game because of patients' faith in medical progress. This Tuskegee study raises questions beyond the obvious ethical impropriety of not obtaining informed consent for a study involving human subjects. That is, we need to consider whether the medical and legal professionals involved in the study were in fact good individuals who were unable to see that they practiced under bad institutional arrangements. In other words, I think compensation should look beyond race and look at science and medicine as institutions who are asking individuals to do bad things. I think the Supreme Court just decided that corporations and certain institutions are persons. Mm-hmm. Okay? So I'll leave that alone. All right. So the point I'm trying to make here is that we should not accept the current thinking about these women and their contributions, because they're not small contributions. They're massive, global, important contributions, and we should not just say, oh, yeah, right, you know, I'm sorry. Okay, the significance of experimentation. Why is all this important? The latest report on women's health, Why Women's Health Can't Wait, and covered by Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes, again revealed that the state of women's health is limited by a male-centered science, and that one of the problems is the lack of female participants in trials. And so you have this card here. If you don't have a card, you should get it. Participation in trials in the U.S. is a huge problem, and more importantly, African-American men and women participate at the lowest levels. This is disastrous for the development of cures for all populations, but especially African Americans in the U.S. I can list for you the many reasons why this population has a fear of the medical system. Henrietta Lacks, Marion Sims, Tuskegee, involuntary sterilization, testing for a violence gene, and some of the examples that Valerie spoke about. Many, many reasons to not trust the system. The importance of developing science that can address the illnesses that affect the black population cannot happen without participation. And this is doubly important for black women whose bodies have been violated and disrespected by science and medicine historically. There are many ways that this can be mitigated. So I'm going to suggest some of my ideas about trying to deal with this. One, a serious attempt at compensation, particularly the Lacks family, not by token plaques, foundations, and the $10,000 community events and speeches, which is what Johns Hopkins is doing, by the way. I want to call out their name, but I just did. But a real systemic response financially and institutionally. Okay? The radical notion that there is a case to be made for reparations based not only on race, but also on gender, using the documentation of the way black women's bodies have been used in service to the state and science during slavery, the Jim Crow era, and beyond. Now, there are some precedents. There's one that has been continuing for many, many years about the comfort women, for example, in Japan. So there's some small precedents that we could look at, but it's been ongoing for a long time. And there's also some work being done on women who have been raped and abused in the military, and this has been going on historically. So there's some thinking about it, but I think not enough thinking of putting gender at the center of this. An apology at the White House to Henrietta Lacks and her progeny, and this event should also be used as an occasion to apologize to the black women like Lucy, Anarka, and Betsy, whose bodies upon which modern gynecology was built. So it's a general sort of mass apology. The radical notion that that there's a case to be made for reparations, did I just talk about that? Oh, I'm too excited. Now number five, erect a statue of Lacks and all the heroic women who have contributed to modern medicine as objects. And I want to just, I see this thing here, to just compare what I call social and intellectual capital. This part here, surgeon, philanthropist, founder of, and all this stuff in recognition of his services in the cause of science and mankind, and he's all over, you know, in different Belgium, France, Italy, and Spain, where Henrietta Lacks sells, is all over the world. And she gets a statue, and she gets that little plaque there. See that with the little pink on it there? That's a plaque that they have for Henrietta Lacks. Now, if you have intellectual capital, if you have social capital, if you are white and you are in charge, you can get this statue. If you're poor and black, guess what happened to you? You're an asterisk. You're a footnote. And I think it's unacceptable. So number six, develop informed consent that is not just premised on the protection of the scientist and the institution, but on the participant. Now, this is a very, very important issue that we have not currently solved, is that all informed consent is skewed towards protection of the institutions and the doctors and the practitioners, and it's not involved in any serious way protecting participants. And it's not involved in any way in structuring in a way that it's accessible and unknowable by the person who's participating. It's a huge, huge issue. And so I'm going to have a quote here by Sonia Shah, who's written a wonderful book called The Body Hunters, and she takes on this issue in a really interesting way. Nobody, it seems, wants to stand in the way of new trials and slow the pace of medical progress by pointing out that informed consent is an emperor with no clothes. Why do we keep using informed consent despite knowing it doesn't really work? Asked bioethicist Jonathan Marino. We haven't got an alternative, and we must find an alternative. For black women in the U.S. who are on the front line of many of the major indices of poor health, they are in a bind, mistrust of the medical system on the one hand, and inadequate science on women's bodies. They must be given a reason to trust the system that it has some history of fairness and contrition. Perhaps these steps might seem excessive, but it is far less excessive than what these women have experienced. And so for me, this is right, and we must attempt it. It may not change things, but we must start the process of removing black women's bodies as victims of science and instead place them as agents of science and medicine. Their trust must be inculcated by mitigating strategies that must include compensation. We must consider the legacy of the subjugation of black women's bodies in the advancement of medical science. Thank you.